the glass capsule. The pictures are created in your mind. Written by Arnold R. Massengill. Prologue. I get out of my truck, reach for my cane, and slowly walk the back road that passes through the land of the old home place. I reach a familiar poplar tree where I would sit and daydream as a young boy. The tree is much bigger now, but from its base it still provides a good view of the hollows and ridges off in the distance. I decide to sit and rest a while. I smile as I remember the days when I run these hills. I sit comfortable in the soft green moss and reflect on my past life. The morning sun is warm, and before I know it, I am completely relaxed and dozing off. As always, with sleep comes a dream. Chapter 1. I wake up and find myself fully stretched out on my back. I'm cold with a stiff neck and a sore left shoulder. I sit up suddenly after slowly focusing my eyes and realize I've been sleeping stark naked on a flat, clear glass panel. I become startled into a chronophobic sort of panicked reality after I look down through the glass panel directly in front of where I sit. For all I can see are treetops and water in the early dawn light. Looking up reveals a partially gray sky that fades to orange and red where the sun is rising. The visible sky seems clear except for a few clouds. Glancing quickly around the landscape and judging from the few trees and the vast fields of corn and the mostly flat surrounding terrain, I guess my location is somewhere in the Midwest. But why am I here suspended in the air above a small lake surrounded by trees? I cross my legs under me, sit up straight, and start to look closer at my immediate surroundings. Completely confused at the moment by my transparent glass perch, I try to concentrate and make some sense of what is happening to me. As I sit in the dim light of morning waiting for the sun to fully rise, I start to study my immediate surroundings. I find myself sitting alone inside a large transparent glass box surrounded by a soft light. The glass box is floating inside a larger transparent capsule. The top, the bottom, and the sides of the glass box look the same dimensions, somewhere close to 10 feet by 10 feet. Each glass panel is completely clear. The glass panels appear to fit tightly together, forming a sealed container with no way to enter nor any way to escape. The large capsule does not move, it just hovers above the lake. The capsule surrounding the glass box extends out from two sides at least another 6 feet. I see no access point, so I go ahead and make the startling assumption that I am permanently sealed inside the glass box, which is permanently sealed inside the capsule, but for what reason will remain a mystery for now. I take in a deep breath and slowly let it out. I repeat the exercise again and then return to normal breathing. I know now the glass box has to have an air supply of some means. For whatever reason, I am breathing normally. If that continues to remain the case, only time will tell. Turning my attention elsewhere, I notice the soft glow of light inside the glass box surrounds just the area where I sit in the center of the glass box. However, I do not see any light source. The soft light makes it difficult to see the remaining area outside the light's glow. I will have to wait for daylight to see if the glass box is empty except for me. When I look into the panels against the gray dawn light, I do not see any reflection of me. I stand up and move closer to a side glass panel. When I place my hands on the flat surface of the glass panel, it shimmers under my touch, but does not allow my hands to pass through. I return to my original location and sit down again. The flat glass surface where I am sitting is soft against my naked bottom, and it also shimmers when I move. The soft light followed me as I moved to the glass side panel and back to the center of the glass box. My fear of the future mounts. Chapter 2. I sit cross-legged in the center of the glass box, shivering in the cool morning air, while I rub my sore shoulder and stretch my neck from side to side in an attempt to work out the stiffness. I feel confused and agitated in the dim morning light. An urge to scream out loud for help is kept repressed and replaced with a whimper as I look down through the glass panel for any sign of people. There's no one around, and considering my present location here above the lake, the chances of seeing anyone is slim to none. I now sit still in silence, wondering what I've done to end up in this predicament. Is this real or really just a bad dream, and if so, when will I wake up, or, as with anything lacking logic, is this all just an illusion in my mind, and if so, when will it end? But either way, reality, illusion, or just a bad dream, as I see it at the moment, I am completely isolated and alone inside this glass box waiting for the full light of day. At least up to now, I think I am alone. I take a closer look around the bottom panel as the gray dawn light further fades and daylight creeps into the glass box. While doing so, I make a discovery that causes me to catch my breath and stop all my movements. For what I am looking at sends a cold chill up the back of my neck and causes goosebumps to pop out on my bare skin. Fear grips my mind and it makes my naked body shiver even more. As I stare across the bottom glass panel, an unnerving fact becomes clear. I am not sealed inside the glass box alone. In the early dawn light, as I look in one corner, I can make out what appears to me as the outline of a coiled-up large snake. I sit still and wait. Focusing closer as the daylight brightens, I now find myself looking into the face of a large, light yellow-colored python. Coiled up in the corner and given its size, it looks like it would easily fill a large wash tub. I have no doubt from looking at its size and considering my present circumstances that I could easily become a future meal. Feeling the apprehension start to rise, I stare at the snake and wonder in silence. Is the python real? Is it just a character in my dream or a cruel part of the illusion? How do I determine if it is real or not? I choose to accept the overwhelming probability of it being real and decide not to reach out and try to touch the snake, but rather to retreat and accept the unknown. I slide slowly backwards towards the corner away from the snake, trying to reach what I feel is a safe distance. I stop way short of reaching the corner because now behind me I can hear the squeaking sounds of agitated rodents. The sounds are coming from the corner of the glass box directly behind me and opposite the python. I stop sliding backwards towards the sounds, look around, and count at least 7 rats of various sizes crowded into the corner. 2 larger rats are scurrying back and forth while staying to the outside of the small mischief, thus keeping the smaller ones wedged in the corner for protection. As the rats move about the flat surface in the corner, it also shimmers under their weight. While I continue to watch them, I can only surmise the rats are so tightly packed into the corner because of my near proximity, and of course the looming presence of the large python. Chapter 3. Now, in the full light of day, I venture to look into the remaining 2 corners, wondering what other surprises awaits me here in my glass cell. In one of the remaining corners is a mound of dirt about 2 feet high. At the back of the pile of dirt is a small tree with only 2 branches. A small black sign hangs from 1 branch. On it, written in white bold letters, are the words, "I am the tree of life." Water drips slowly from the leaves at the end of the branch and disappears into the dirt. I notice movement in the dirt where the water disappears. A closer look reveals dung beetles working in the soft soil. On the other branch sits a small white owl. A sign on a wooden cross, sticking out of the dirt on top of the mound, has written on it a biblical phrase taken from Genesis 3:19. Ashes to ashes, dust to dust. In the corner opposite the mound of dirt is a large brass key propped up against the glass panel. I can see words inscribed on the key. I look closer and make out the phrase, "This is the key to evermore." I can only think of one parallel meaning of the wording, and it is found in Revelation 1:18. "I am he that liveth and was dead, and behold, I am alive forevermore, amen, and have the keys of hell and of death." I turn back and face the snake while I try to process the findings. What does all this have to do with me being locked in this glass box? I try to sit deathly still, but I feel the need to look around and further evaluate my situation in the hope of gaining answers. As I survey all around, I notice the capsule appears suspended 25 to 30 feet above the water next to the shoreline of a small lake. The lake itself is situated near the middle of a large stand of trees. But suspended how? What forces are at work here? I look down and notice the wind is blowing through the treetops. However, the capsule does not seem to move at all. All I see around me only offers up more questions. Now, I listen carefully because off in the distance I can hear the faint sound of bluegrass music. Music means people, but the sound is so faint it's hard to tell which direction the music is coming from, especially with the wind blowing. Suddenly, a bell begins to ring. The ringing sound is loud enough to tell it is coming from the east. I listen intently and silently count the rings. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. After the 12th ring, it stops. I think it might be a bell in a clock tower, but why is it ringing 12 times so early in the day? Why can't I see the clock tower? I pivot slowly around on the shimmering surface, looking at all the panels in the bright daylight of the morning. I notice something written backward in big, bold black letters on the outside of each side glass panel. It reads, "Be not afraid," and it now appears to move slowly as it circles around the outside of the glass box. It reminds me of those digital neon signs seen on the sides of buildings in larger cities. Not wanting to become too distracted, I look back at the snake, thinking, "The message is for me. But why and who put it there?" Chapter 4. By now, the sun is high enough in the sky to warm the inside of the glass box. The added warmth causes the large snake to start to slowly uncoil and move away from its corner. It raises its head about 2 feet and looks around, first at me. Then it moves its head slightly to one side and looks at the rats behind me. I watch intently as it moves forward slightly, becoming ever the more intimidating. The snake then stops, and as it looks back at me, its head is only inches away from my face. It's so close I can smell the musk odor coming from its pale skin. I notice while the snake moves its head slowly from side to side, its long tongue flickers in and out. I'm sure it's searching and finding at least 3 areas inside the glass box giving off the heat of possible food sources. I have no way of knowing when the snake fed last. I can only hope the rats and the owl are more favored over me as a food source. I'm sure the snake will feed in the near future. The rat mischief behind me is silent. Since they have no immediate place to hide, they huddle together and remain still. I do my best to remain silent and still while the snake is so close. I feel my body trembling as I hold my breath, waiting to see what the snake will do next. I relax and breathe a soft sigh of relief when the large snake slinks back to its own corner and coils itself up again. It takes a few minutes for my body to stop trembling and I feel exhausted. The warmth from the sun causes me to become drowsy, even though it seems only a few hours have passed since I first woke up. I fight the urge to succumb to the drowsy feeling as I am not at all sure of what might happen should I fall asleep. As I continue to fight sleep, I keep an eye on the python in the corner facing me. I'm not sure as to why, but I see the snake start to slowly uncoil again, and then just as slowly recoil to settle back into its corner. The rats are still quiet, and only the faint sound of bluegrass music breaks the nearly total silence. I'm still sitting cross-legged, just slightly away from the center of the glass box, and I feel myself giving in to the urge to close my eyes. Even as I fight the urge to sleep, my head sinks slowly down toward my chest, and I drift into a sound sleep. Chapter 5. I awake to the sound of the clock tower bell ringing, and for a moment I am somewhat confused and disoriented. As I regain my senses, I remember where I am and find I am still facing the large python. As I look at the large snake, I notice a bulge behind the snake's head. I pivot slowly around to look at the rats. I count and conclude that one of the larger rats is missing. This would certainly explain the bulge in the snake. The next thought that comes to me is one not of surprise that the snake eat one of the rats, for rats are a natural food source for snakes. The next thought is the fact that the snake would have come so close to me in its pursuit of the rat. It all happened while I slept. The invisible clock tower bell has stopped ringing, but in my current state of orientation, I did not take the time to concentrate on the number of times it rang. I don't know how long I was asleep, but judging from the high position of the sun, it must have been several hours, or it could have been several days. I can't tell for sure since I have no real reference to time. As the day moves forward, all I can do is constantly stare at the snake while trying to remember my life before this ordeal. I'm not able to remember anything before waking up in this glass box, so I give up and return my full attention to the snake. The sun has started to descend closer to the western horizon, indicating that nightfall is not far off. I do not relish the thought of spending a night sealed in this glass box with my present company, but nothing I have experienced thus far has indicated otherwise. I realize I've done nothing but stare at the snake all day, not even bothering to look around outside. I take time to look around outside the glass box before nightfall takes over completely, and in doing so, make a difficult-to-explain observation. The terrain has changed. To my surprise, it appears that I am now somewhere along the east coast, hovering over a harbor next to a large city. I look down and see boats of different sizes, shapes, and vocation. Some are moving in toward the docks, and many more are already docked along the pier. I look closer and recognize lobster traps of various colors sitting stacked on the pier alongside colorful lobster boats. I am very surprised at what I see, but am more surprised that I can remember this place. I see a cafe where I ate lunch a couple of times, once with a loved one, another time alone. I remember shooting photos at the pier while walking the street that runs along the harbor. I recognize the street as being Commercial Street, leading me to conclude the capsule is over the harbor at Portland, Maine. However surprised at my present location, the real question in my mind at this moment is how the capsule got transported to this location and not why am I just now noticing. As I continue to look down, I can see some people walking on the sidewalk along the street. One older guy with a camera bag on his shoulder and a camera in his hands looks familiar. He is walking along the pier snapping pictures. Others are working on the docks and still others are working on some of the larger boats docked at the piers. The harbor is alive with activity as the evening nears. In my excitement to see human life, I start to yell out to see if anyone can hear me and maybe possibly see me inside the glass box. I yell out the first words I've said out loud since finding myself trapped in this glass box. Hey, hey, there on the docks, Hello. Help me. Hey, can you hear me? Hoping I can attract attention, I also wave my arms. As I yell, the strangest phenomenon of my entrapment thus far occurs. I actually see the black-colored words come out of my mouth and strike the glass panel in front of me, bounce off, and fall down toward the bottom glass panel. I look down and see the letters piled up on the bottom glass panel. I yell out again. Does anybody hear me? I did it again because I want to see if what I witnessed before is for real. Sure enough, the black-colored words bounce off the glass panel again and end up in a pile on the bottom glass panel. I'm truly dumbfounded by this, but can only sit and wonder how all this is possible. My spirit wanes as I watch the life along the harbor in the city below. All the while, as I sit here looking down and feeling more lost and depressed, there is one thing for certain. I am still trapped in what I have reluctantly come to accept as an invisible existence and cruel confinement, all inside my own transparent prison. While I sit watching the sunlight slip out of the sky, the lights of the city take over as a focal point. The sparkling city lights take my thoughts away from my plight for just a few minutes. However, the movements of the rats brings me back to my own senseless reality. I turn around to observe them in the dark, and can make out the entire group of rats scurrying around the pile of black letters that made up the words I yelled out earlier. I figure they are looking for food, but I can't imagine they would go for the letters. Nevertheless, to my surprise, they are eating the letters. They finish eating and move back into their corner. The small white owl hoots for the first time. I sit in the dark wondering if this ordeal can get any weirder. I turn back to the calming effects of the city lights to wait for darkness to turn into the light of another day. Sleep is the farthest thing from my mind right now, but I know I need to try to sleep before daylight. I must keep my waking hours for daytime, for that is when the snake is most active. The rats may scurry around at night, but in my mind, they are the least of my concerns. I keep thinking whatever happens next should not surprise me anymore. I vow, at least while awake under these confining circumstances, to sit and try to gather facts and keep my emotions in check as best I can. I shift my weight and lean back on my hands while looking at the city lights in the dark. I wonder aloud, if the words do not pass out through the panels, does this mean the energy generated from my emotions just stays locked up inside the glass box as well? How can I tell if that is even possible? What does a human emotion of any kind even look like in its released state? Maybe I'm starting to lose my mind. I grimace at the thought. For me to even be thinking this now, that is what's really weird. But nevertheless, an unconventional thought pops into my mind. I'm glad being weird is not an emotion, for if it were, I would be drowning in negative energy. Whatever it is I'm thinking, I can feel all my emotions, except for one, loneliness, draining out of my being as I watch the additional words bounce off the panel in front of me and fall to the floor. I grimace again and shake my head. I must really be losing my mind. That's the only way I can explain my thinking. I watch the rats scurry again from their corner, and I have to react with a silent chuckle at the sight of them feasting on the letters. At the same time, the owl drops down from its perch and grabs one of the smaller rats. It returns to the tree branch and devours its meal. As I continue to watch, it eventually dawns on me that in this weird arrangement, I am providing food for the rats when I speak out loud, and at the same time, the rats provide food for the snake and the owl. With that being established, an important question looms unanswered. Who will provide for my nourishment while trapped in this glass box? Come to think of it, I have not felt hunger or thirst since I first woke up in this glass box. Even if I did feel hunger, given the choices, I have no desire to try eating my words or attempt to eat the rats, the dung beetles, or the owl. The snake is much too large for one man with no weapons to attempt an attack. I want to think I am at the top of the food chain, but in my present situation, I do not feel like I am at the top, although I have to try something. I know I will perish without food or water. I get up and walk over to the tree. I catch a few drops of water in my hand and watch as it forms a small pool. I sip to see if the water is suitable to drink. Feeling confident, I catch and drink enough to wet my throat, but not enough to quench my thirst. I return to my last location in the glass box and sit down. I notice the dung beetles as they move across the bottom glass panel, rolling balls of dung gathered from the rat mischief. They move in a straight line across the glass panel towards the pile of dirt. I get up and move closer to the pile of dirt so the light from the soft glow that surrounds me will allow me to see where they are going once they reach the pile of dirt. They continue in a straight line up to the top of the pile. Once they have reached the top, they dig and bury the balls of dung. When finished, they go back down the same way and return to the rat mischief. After they disappear into the dark, I scratch around in the soft dirt and uncover a large cluster of dung balls. I notice movement among the dung ball cluster and recognize the white larvae of the dung beetle. I gather all I can find, replace the dirt over the dung balls, and step away from the dirt pile. After swallowing the larvae, I catch a little more water to drink and then return to where I had been sitting before. I force myself to not think of my meager meal and where I am now on the food chain. I do, however, think about the natural order of living things. All living things die and return to the earth. All living things try to do what is necessary under any given circumstance to prolong life. But in my case, in being confined inside this glass box, I suspect time, although not a living, breathing thing, has the upper hand and it keeps marching along. I sit surrounded by the soft glow of light inside the glass box and surrounded by the dark of night on the outside. Working my mind by going back through the day, I try to wear myself down so that I might go to sleep before daylight appears. I go over all the things that have occurred up until now, but cannot make convincing sense of the happenings during the time that has lapsed. I become exhausted mentally, so I decide to lie down and curl up in a fetal position, hoping sleep comes easy and quick. My last thoughts, before finally drifting off to sleep, are questions which are not going to get answered. Why have I not heard the bell in the clock tower ring lately? And why does nobody notice the glowing light from the glass box, even if they can't hear me when I yelled out for help? But as sleep comes over me, I still hear the one constant sound of music playing out there somewhere in the darkness. It is the bluegrass music, always the bluegrass music. Chapter 6. I awake to the first ring of the bell coming from the invisible clock tower. I lay still and count the number of rings. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. It stops ringing this time after 8 rings. I look up at the bright sun to try to determine the time of day. The bell in the clock tower struck 8 times, and I initially thought it indicated 8 a.m., but the sun is much higher, closer to 10 or 11 a.m. By my reckoning, the present position of the sun points out the bell ringing alone is not a good indicator of the correct time. I conclude the bell might really be ringing for another purpose altogether. The ringing of the bell is really a countdown of the days. It appears I have slept soundly in spite of the cool night air. I sit up, stretch my legs out in front of me, and raise my arms up over my head while twisting from side to side. After a brief moment of bending forward and trying to touch my toes, I return to sitting cross-legged and fold my arms across my chest. By now, the sun is up high enough to warm the air inside the glass box, and it dawns on me to look at the snake. I know the cool air of the night will help keep the python from being active, but it is hard to know just when it might feel the warmth and uncoil. I do not see a bulge behind its head like in a past morning, but I decide to pivot around slowly anyway and count the rats. The second larger rat is missing from the mischief. That leaves only the 4 smaller rats and, of course, the owl and me. If I am right about the bell ringing being a countdown of the days, then it is apparent now that I've slept for more than 2 days and nearly half of whatever day this is. That definitely gave the snake plenty of time to catch another rat and digest it for a longer period of time. The snake is active now, but does not uncoil itself. I turn my attention briefly to the outside and can tell I'm farther south and still on the east coast. The warmer mornings explains why the python is active earlier in the day. However, I do not think my being awake during any of the past days would have altered the snake's intentions. I would simply have felt firsthand the tangled emotions of having the snake come so close, instead of just imagining it, as I am now. I turn back to face the corner occupied by the snake. It has settled down, so I take the opportunity to look around outside the glass box. I already know I'm farther south, but how far and exactly where is unknown until I take a closer look at the surroundings. As I look around outside the glass box, I can see the top of a lighthouse off in the distance. I look down to see a long stretch of sand extending along the ocean. The lighthouse is sitting on the edge of a large sand dune, and I immediately recognize it as the one at Cape Hatteras on the Outer Banks of North Carolina. I wonder why here, then remember it is another place I spent time with a loved one, and again later by myself. I begin to think long and hard about why I'm only transported during the times I'm asleep. Is it sleep that triggers the travel, or is it just the blocking out of all light and movement when I close my eyes? I decide to put my thinking to a test. I look toward the python to make sure it is still coiled up in its corner before I close my eyes. Satisfied that the python is still settled down, I fold my arms across my chest and close my eyes. I am dead still, calm, with no thoughts of selecting a place to travel. I remain in a relaxed but very still position with my eyes closed for what seems like 5 minutes. I slowly open my eyes and look around. I am still looking at the top of the lighthouse. Disappointed, I think, Does this mean my theory is without merit, or is there another element necessary to trigger the transport of the glass capsule? I continue to ponder the possible reasons why I did not get transported and hit upon the idea of adding my destination of choice. I sit back and fold my arms across my chest while remaining still and calm as before. This time I am thinking about my travel to the Marshall Islands in the warm South Pacific, and in particular the island of Kwajalein. I remain still with my eyes closed for what seems the same amount of time as before. When I open my eyes, I find I am still looking at the Cape Hatteras Lighthouse. Then it dawns on me that all the other locations are places I have been with a loved one. Maybe that is the missing piece. I try again, this time picking Old Faithful and Yellowstone National Park as my destination. I open my eyes, and sure enough, I am now looking down at a crowd of people sitting on log benches waiting for the large geyser to erupt. I know now that I can transport the glass box to any number of other places, but I decide to wait here for the geyser to erupt. I want to see if anyone can see me up here in the capsule while they are looking up at the waterspout. I don't have to wait for long. Old Faithful erupts, and while the people are watching, I wave my arms and shout, even though I know shouting is a useless effort. Hey, people, do you not see me sitting up here in this blasted, transparent glass capsule? Nobody looks in my direction, even though I am right beside the waterspout. Nobody, that is, except for a small child. I stop waving and watch the kid pointing up at me as the parent pulls him away toward the parking lot. I don't know what to think or what else to do, so I just watch the steaming water spout fall into a pool around the blowhole. I turn my attention away from Old Faithful and watch the rats feed on the letters piled on the bottom glass panel. The owl drops down again and picks up another small rat for its next meal. This latest development puts my mind into overdrive, thinking about how I can now control the capsule. I now know that I can move the capsule to a cooler climate whenever I want, and that will help to keep the snake dormant during the daylight hours. I go ahead and move the capsule farther west in order to enjoy a longer day while I plan a strategy. I select a location along the coast on Highway 1 in Central California. There is not much daylight left, but I decide to stay here and see if the cool night air will keep the snake inactive while I sleep. I will try to stay awake, but it is doubtful that I can last all night without closing my eyes. However, I am hoping the 3-hour time difference will allow me to sleep, wake up before sunup, and move back to a cool northern location on the east coast before the python stirs. I watch the sun set on the Pacific Ocean, all the while thinking I just might get to rest peacefully tonight. I can deal with everything else tomorrow. Chapter 7. I awake with the brightness of the sun shining into my face and the heat of the sun against my naked skin. The warm sun along with the bell ringing brings me out of a restful sleep. I lay there and count the rings. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. If my conclusion as to the meaning behind the bell ringing is true, then I only have 5 more days until this ordeal is over. I sit up and realize my plan of waking up early to move the capsule back east and stay ahead of the python is now foiled by my oversleeping. At least that is my thinking until I look out and see the lighthouse. To my bewilderment, I am back at Cape Hatteras, North Carolina. My next move is to check on the status of the snake and then turn around to count the rats. The snake is still coiled up in its corner. I only see 1 small rat left from the mischief. The python has consumed 2 small rats in order to satisfy its hunger. The remaining rat must know it is not a good idea to stay alone in the corner. It has moved close to me and always keeps me between it and the snake. It has become a strange companionship of entrapment, but I figure the longer the rat stays alive, the longer I have to figure out if all this will end well for me. For the next 4 days, I try hard to keep the capsule in a cold area in order to keep the python inactive. I do it more for my own sake because helping the rat stay alive for as long as possible helps me stay alive longer. I am nearly exhausted from my efforts at trying to stay in cold areas, and as a consequence, I have lost all interest in knowing where I am anymore. It always becomes more confusing whenever I wake up from periods of restless sleep to find the destination is in an area with a warm climate. I know I have to keep trying, but I cannot trust my mind when I close my eyes. I know it is only a matter of time before the snake makes off with the last rat, and I become the object of its attention when its hunger comes a-calling again. While I sit in the warmth of the daylight wondering what might happen next, I notice letters still scattered on the bottom panel. I wonder why the rats left them, why not eat all the letters, but then I think, there's only 1 rat left. As I look closer, I notice they appear arranged into words. I lean forward in an attempt to make out the words and now can see the phrase, "You are dead soon," laid out crooked and jagged across the glass panel. I sit back to take it all in while this weird dream or illusion I am living in plays on. Now, how do I answer the question, am I dead soon or will I be dead in the near future? The questions will go unanswered for now, as I sit cross-legged in the center of the glass panel watching the snake watch me. The last small rat is close enough to my backside to touch my skin, and it is not making any movement or sound. We remain this way the rest of the day and into the night. Restless sleep finally takes over, in what has to surely be the wee hours of the morning. Chapter 8. This morning starts out cool, but it heats up rather quickly since I am, again, suspended somewhere in the south. I do not feel the rat against my skin, so I look around to see if it is still with me. It is no longer anywhere in the glass box, so that can only mean the python ate it during the warmth of the early morning, or the owl caught it for its meal during the night. I fear the small rat will only be an appetizer for the python, if it was, in fact, the one that ate it. The heat causes me little concern in my weakened condition. I'm much weaker now due to dehydration and lack of nutrition of any sustainable kind, making me even more vulnerable to the large python. I find I am no longer sitting cross-legged in the center of the glass box, but leaning back against the pile of dirt. This must have happened during the period of my restless sleep. I watch the snake uncoil and start to stretch out slowly across the bottom glass panel. I have no fear of the python now as it raises its head and looks in my direction. I smile at the sight of the pale yellow color of the python, thinking that its beauty will be the last thing I see while being still trapped in this glass box. I look up at the panel. The sign that read, "Be not afraid," has disappeared. I have not heard the bell in the invisible clock tower ring at all today. The last time I heard the bell, it stopped after the first ring. I try to reanalyze the reason why it stopped after one ring, and I again conclude the bell ringing has just been counting the days left in my life. No ringing today can only mean my time is nearing its end. As I sit and watch the snake, I notice the sound of bluegrass music is louder. I can now make out the words to a song. I recognize the bluegrass song as being "When My Time Comes to Go" by the Jackson County Boys. The last emotion I feel is loneliness as I watch the python slowly move closer. I look up and see the white owl still sitting on the tree branch. Suddenly, it flaps its wings and flies across the glass box. I think it is going to crash into the side glass panel, but when it reaches the glass, it passes through as if the glass panel had disappeared. I watch as it passes through the end of the glass capsule and flies away. I continue to watch until it is out of sight, knowing that all hope is gone. I feel the cool, rough underbelly of the snake as it moves across my bare legs. In the next few seconds, I find myself being bound in its coils. I feel the tightness start to creep in, first my head, then my shoulders, my chest, and finally all the way down to my legs. My breathing becomes labored, and then the darkness takes over as I feel my head enter the mouth of the python. For the next few minutes, my life flashes before me. All the people I've known, all the places I've been go by so rapidly, all racing by on a big projector screen. I manage one final smile. Then, as would be expected, I am slowly consumed by the python. The sound of the bluegrass music stops, and silence joins the darkness. There in the warm, wet darkness, just as the last memories of my life start to slip away, and just as the last movie frame of my life flashes by, I'm suddenly jolted wide awake. I am sweating in the heat of the midday sun. I look around and find myself still sitting at the base of the familiar large poplar tree. It takes only a few more seconds to realize what I actually have been doing while sitting here. As I gather my senses, I remember. Before I had sat down at the base of the tree, I'd been walking a familiar back road, one traveled when I was a young lad living here long ago. I had found the same tree where I would spend time sitting and daydreaming of travel adventures far beyond the ridges and the mountains off in the distance. I had sat down and started to remember my past, and like times before during my youth, had eventually succumbed to sleep while relaxed in the soft green moss that still grows at the base of the tree. The seemingly magical power brought on by sitting at the base of the poplar tree shows me that dreaming is just as strong now as it was during the days of my youth. Why such a strange dream, I can't explain. I struggled to get up, even with the help of my cane. I slowly make my way back the way I had come, all the while wondering if living a long life is what can cause this subconscious mind to imagine such a horrid, vivid dream. I continue to walk along the road back to my truck thinking, it's good to still be alive. The end.